And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. For our final segment, we're going to be taking a look at what's happening in Santa Fe at the state legislature. We're speaking with Kathy Stark from the group Patients Primero. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You guys are one of the driving forces in the effort to try to get health care reform passed to keep doctors in our state. So for people who aren't up on the issue, why don't we take just a minute to let people, what is the problem?
Well, a recent survey of physicians done by the Legislative Finance Committee found that 2/3 of the physicians who responded said they were contemplating leaving the state.
That's a problem.
And the main issue that they cited was medical malpractice, specifically the punitive damage provisions.
Right.
They also cited education and crime.
In the state, you mean?
In the state, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Which are both, you know, obviously that reasons. And so we get all that. Let's talk a little bit about malpractice. Why is that such a problem, especially the punitive damages part of that?
Well, with the punitive damage, of course, they're meant to punish. They're meant for really egregious conduct. And it's our understanding that 91% of the lawsuits that are being filed include a claim of punitive damages
right.
before discovery is even done.
So it's almost automatic.
And so that puts pressure on the insurer and the physician to settle. And when you continue to settle lawsuits, your premiums are going to go up because you're considered a high-risk environment.
Yep.
So it's in my mind, it's kind of like a hamster wheel that's been created. The objections, I know there's a bill, and I can't tell you which one it is. There's too many bills right now dealing with health care.
There are.
And their hearings overlap, so you don't get to listen to all of
them. And it's a 30-day session, and
right.
it's just crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Where was my mind going? A bill, there's a number of bills being introduced. One of the bills would protect physicians from punitive damages. One would cap physicians. The bill coming up on Friday, which is House Bill 99, which is the one right now that we're really focused on. To us, it creates a balanced system. The opposition says that it reduces a person who has been harmed. It reduces their access to justice. And no one's been able to explain that to me because other states have enacted these reforms and injured patients, you know, have access to justice
right.
and they deserve to be compensated and their medical costs covered. In addition, there are a couple provisions that a lot of people aren't aware of that are already in effect since 2021 that just need to be codified. And one of those has to do with the definition of occurrence because the definition is very vague in the statute. But in 2021, and it's a little hard to figure out, it appears that the trial attorneys, when they were doing the negotiations for the current bill, agreed to a definition of occurrence that was anybody who was involved in your care when the alleged incident took place is one occurrence. So it's not stacking. You know, I can't file a suit against my surgeon and the anesthesiologist
and
the nurse.
I see. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then I think it was in 20. Yeah, it was also in 21 because there was a lawsuit going on. And the Trial Attorneys Association filed an appeal on that particular case saying, well, no, that's not the definition of occurrence. They later had to go back and withdraw their brief to the court saying, kind of, gee, we didn't know that we had negotiated that in 2021. Mm. So that's already there. That's already in effect, and it's been working. So it just needs to be codified. The other issue is with lump sum payments versus the system we had for decades was a pay-as-you-go. In 2022, the superintendent of insurance stopped doing lump sum payments. And they did this based on their concerns of how it would impact the solvency of the fund and also that the attorneys were taking their percentage right off the top of the lump sum. So we have been doing a pay-as-you-go system since 22.
Okay.
It just needs to be codified.
Okay.
That shouldn't be difficult. It shouldn't be all that controversial because we've been doing that.
And there are bills pending on all of those. Is that correct?
Well, that one is House Bill 99, and that is scheduled for a hearing in Health and Human Services on Friday morning, 8:30 or 9. It hasn't, as of last night, it hadn't hit the schedule yet.
Right. I'm just curious, have you been to Santa Fe since the session started? Or?
No, traveling is very difficult for
me. Gotcha, gotcha. I know other members of your group have.
Yep, they're up there.
Yeah. So, obviously, there is a big push from the public. I mean, credit Think New Mexico for a couple of years ago really kind of shining the light. First I heard of it. Well, not first I was made aware of the totality of it, put it that way. My sense is that there is some momentum among the public. We know that our doctors are getting older. They're retiring. They're leaving this. We know that patients are having to go to other states to get the care they need. I guess my question is, what the reports you're hearing back, is any of that getting through? Is any of that making an impact on the senators and representatives?
Well, I know that they're hearing it.
Yeah.
We saw that in the special session where they were getting deluged with calls and visits.
Yeah.
What that's actually doing to the needle. I think it's moving.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some strong opposition, which, I'm very anxious to hear what is that? And like I said before, but specifically, how does this limit a person's access to justice? Because what we have said all along is we want a system that's balanced. If a patient has been harmed, they need to be compensated. But there's also 2.1 million people in this state mm-hmm. that need access to health care. And when you look nationally at the top reasons for medical malpractice, besides surgical errors, the next one is delayed access to care. I mean, we're creating this perfect storm.
Yeah.
Where if I can't have access to care by the time I go and get care, be it in this state or elsewhere, I am sicker, my risks go up.
That's a vicious cycle.
Our aging population, mm-hmm. our risks go up. And to me, it's like, okay, you need to stop the hamster wheel and figure this out. I was talking with a practitioner who met with the superintendent of insurance at the OSI, and he reported back that currently there are 70 people in the patient compensation fund. And the patient compensation fund picks up, the medical costs, 70. And there's 2.1 million New Mexicans that need access.
Oh.
And I don't fault the 70. They're entitled to that. It's been determined that they were harmed. But when I think of 70 and I think of 2.1 million people and the reports that have just been flowing in for the last year, 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, if they're even able to find a specialist. There was somebody yesterday who's been looking for a primary care physician for 2 years and is now very sick.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be sicker. And the issues, beyond malpractice, we've said before, the issues are complex, they're multi-layered. And one of the things that I have asked, and no one really has a good answer, is how do you take a comprehensive look at our healthcare system in New Mexico in a 30 or a 60-day session?
You just don't. Yeah. One of the frustrating, it looks like the medical compacts bill is going to get through. As we were talking earlier, anytime you go into the session as Senate Bill 1, that's always a good sign. It was passed 40-0 in the Senate. But to me, still, that is an aggravating, that should have been passed last year. There was general agreement on that last year, but they got snagged on the details. And so they're thinking, and it's the only thinking they can have under the circumstances, we'll do it next year. And they do that with so many issues.
Right.
And next year comes along, and, something else is more important. It's just an incredibly inefficient. But as beyond that, it is all, there's also, I hate to say this, but there's also self-dealing when it comes to malpractice. And I'm not asking you, I'll say this myself. I've seen it with my own eyes. When it gets to the judiciary committees, it gets killed. And that is because we have Senator Cervantes was on this show talking about the fact that he himself is a malpractice attorney. And I asked him, why is that not a conflict of interest? And his response was, I'm not writing the bill. Okay, that doesn't answer my question. Why are you voting on the bill? Why are you presiding over hearings on the bill? It's just,
well, and when he was here, because I'd watched the, and I'm not going to say it right, so it's just the CC&J committee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Courts and Criminal Justice.
Thank you. I never get it right. But when I listened to that hearing in November, November 6th and 7th, I think it was, and I heard Senator Duhigg, who is a trial attorney, very smart woman, and Joe Cervantes say this fear that the doctors are talking about with punitive damage and seizure of their personal property doesn't happen. It's never going to happen. So when I was here with Senator Cervantes, I said, okay, Senator, you said it doesn't happen. It's never going to happen. So cap it.
Right.
What's the problem?
Right. What was his answer?
He didn't really answer me.
Yeah.
He didn't really answer me. Yeah. That, well, I recall.
So I wanted to sort of dig deeper, too, into the opposition. So we have, it sounds like, legislators who are opposing this medical malpractice and the caps. Are there other folks in, just in terms of, like, the industry, maybe? Are there insurance companies or lobbyists who are trying to convince our legislators that this is a bad piece of legislation?
That it is a bad piece of legislation?
Yeah.
I don't know what the insurance companies are doing, quite frankly.
Okay.
New Mexico Safety Over Profit is obviously the voice, the public voice, mm-hmm. of opposition.
Right.
Okay.
And the hearing on the MedMal bill, House Bill 99, was moved to Friday, which is the same day that New Mexico Safety Over Profit is hosting their Patient Advocacy Day. Interesting change of events. And I hope with the Patient Advocacy Day, that patients who are harmed are there and can speak up, and mm-hmm. patients who don't have access can be there. We are all patients, but that is the public face of opposition. They've done a number of op-eds lately, and one I took exception to because it talks about the patient-led groups, plural, are being financed by hospitals and insurance companies. And I'm like, hey, we don't have any money.
Right.
We have been offered money
right.
by hospital associations, health associations, and we have said, no, we are patients.
Mm-hmm.
So don't lump everybody into a bucket.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in his defense, you guys are unique. Almost everybody else up there who's lobbying is doing it professionally.
Sure.
You know, so. So what, and we hear Peter say this a lot, that there are other things we can do. It's not just malpractice. We could get new residencies, and we can, you know, do these things with the compacts, and we can give them gross receipts tax deductions. And is that just nibbling around the edges, or?
Well, I think it's part of a comprehensive look. I just think it's being done so piecemeal.
Well, yes.
Okay, so House Bill 68 passed the other day. 7-4 and 3 against. And that was appropriation to Workforce Solutions for a healthcare recruitment program, $2 million.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me if we're not fixing the underlying issues of why doctors are leaving or why our students up at UNM or Burrell are not staying.
Correct.
There was a reason, and this is just my mind. Nobody, I think, has told me this. When I look at their 10-point plan, there's a reason it's in the sequence it's in.
Now, who are we talking about? Who's 10-point plan?
I'm sorry, think New Mexico's
okay,
in their study that they did. Because some people will say, well, we need to have more residency slots. That's great. We do.
Right.
But in order to have residency slots, you need to have attending physicians to train and supervise them. We just lost a residency program because the hospital that was in partnership with this residency program, they lost physicians, and then the two physicians on site, they left. So these students are left hanging. So saying, let's put money into residency programs or let's put money into recruitment, if you don't have those doctors there to continue the training and supervising, it doesn't work. It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
There needs to be a logical approach to this. And I don't know. I was looking last night because I missed the Zoom meeting on the GRT deduction. But it's my understanding that they had more work to do.
On that bill. Yeah.
On the compact. So the physician compact passed the Senate. It's now going to go back over to the House. It will get passed in the House. Then
And they'll pat themselves on the back and they'll say, hey,
look
what
we did.
Look
what we did. Yeah. That's right. And then physician's assistants, audiology, speech language, physical therapy, occupational therapy, dentists, social work, EMS. Those passed the Health and Human Services Committee the other day. They have a due pass. Several of them had substitutes because they're continuing to work with the managers at the respective compacts. And that was in the House Judiciary, I think. Maybe it was in Health and Human Services. But then they're going to go over to the Senate and they're going to run into problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because Peter Wirth has said they're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same language problems.
Peter Wirth being the Senate floor leader, is that right? One of the Senate leaders.
He's definitely
a
leader, yeah.
I forget if he's president or floor leader, but they're, right.
Yeah, and then today at 1:30 today, they're hearing, Health and Human Services is hearing the compact on psychologists and counselors. And here again, we were talking about, let's put it off till next year where, it's not ready, blah, blah, blah. We have a huge mental health crisis.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I look at this and say, you can't put this off. How are you going to service all these people that we say we're going to have this behavioral health program?
I said we have passed other bills that are reliant on being able to provide those services.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
it just—I mean—it's mind-boggling and it's very frustrating because
right.
I'm a systems person. I look at the big picture under the dome and say, okay, how do we carve this up so that it actually works?
Mm-hmm. So I always ask people the same question. For folks who are sitting at home listening to this and thinking, what can I do? What would you tell them?
I would tell them to get on NMLEGIS.gov, New Mexico Legislature.gov. Go to the What's Happening tab. You will see the schedule for community for all the committee meetings. And in that schedule, there is a Zoom link for the topics that you're interested in. Get on Zoom, raise your hand, give public comment. Call your legislators and tell them what you think and what you want them to do. All their contact information is on that webpage. That webpage is actually very well done, in my opinion, as far as for the public to access.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to speak up. I mean, legislators, we vote them in, we can vote them out.
Yeah.
They need to represent all of us, and they need to solve problems for us.
Before getting into all of this, had you been politically active in the past, or did this really get you motivated to kind of jump in and get involved?
Years and years and years ago.
Okay.
I had a medical bad outcome, and I was on Social Security disability for years. I was one of the only people I know that got it right out of the box.
Right.
I must have really been a mess. But anyways, I'm like, okay, I couldn't remember my job. I'm going to go back to college. I'm going to learn something else. And I did a news report on a local station in Minneapolis and got back to college the following Saturday and was noted in my mailbox to appear before the dean. And I went in. I thought, oh, she's going to tell me I did a great job. And instead, I got the inquisition as, what is your diagnosis and what's wrong with you? And they determined I was not a suitable candidate, and I was escorted from the campus. And I was an A student, and I'm like, well, this can't be legal. It was a private college, and so it was legal. At that point, you could discriminate against people with disabilities if you're a private college.
Yeah.
So then I went back. The Social Security said, go to rehab. They'll help people like you.
Hmm.
I went to rehab, and the rehab counselor looked at my file and said, well, it's a good thing you're getting SSDI because that's the best you're going to be able to do.
Mm.
It was winter. I got down on the street corner in St. Paul, and I'm like, it's snowing and cold. I'm like, well, if this is the best I can do, you got two choices. You got a gun. You got a bag full of narcotics. Or you can get angry. And I got angry and eventually made it up to the governor's office. And my message was very simple. How dare you hire anybody who would say this is the best you can do?
Mm-hmm.
You incrementally break it down. And so I went into rehab counseling for a while. And one interview, they said, okay, you have a 47-year-old male, has paranoid schizophrenia, and his career goal is to be president. What do you do? And I said, well, I know what you don't do. You don't tell him he can't.
Yes.
Let's break it down. Step number one, step number two.
Yeah.
And so I did advocacy for people with disabilities for years, which is how I came to Las Cruces. Okay. And then most recently working on the animal welfare ordinance in Las Cruces.
Oh, that's right. I knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that.
And then this one, of course, I'm definitely affected by it. I can't count how many primary care physicians I've had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the things that we talk a lot about is there are those of us that we're not wealthy, but we're privileged. If I need to go to Mayo Clinic or like Senator Cervantes, go to MD Anderson, we can do that. But we have 42 to 50% mm-hmm. of our population. Mm-hmm. They can't. They can't even make it to Albuquerque. They don't have the financial resource. They don't have the transportation. What about them?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is kind of a what would you see as success mm-hmm. at the end of this session?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
It is. It is. Because I think so much of this just seems like it's out of reach. So mm-hmm. frustratingly so.
Well, I would have to say the malpractice reform. I have to take physicians at their word that two-thirds of them are thinking of leaving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it when I look at the situation, we're not approaching the cliff. We've gone over the edge.
Yeah.
And if that isn't stopped so that we can start rebuilding, everything else is just not very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And can I ask about your group's work with the governor's office, and what's your sense about her? Because the other thing, right, is just how many bills that she didn't sign last year.
Right.
And so I'm curious if you got a sense of if it does pass, all you know, everything goes through and we celebrate, and then it hits her desk, and then she doesn't sign or whatever, pocket vetoes. But what is your group sense, and have you been working with her in her office?
We have liaisons up in Santa Fe that have been at the Roundhouse almost daily. Mm-hmm. But I have to take the governor at her word. Mm-hmm. And she has said she will not leave her position until something is done with medical malpractice. Now, what does that actually look like? Yeah. We don't know.
A special session, it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Well, right, but if there's nothing that is passed, yeah, maybe another special
session. Right, and what is she doing in the background
that
we don't have another special session where everybody goes back for 2-3 hours and then and they leave?
That's right.
It doesn't accomplish anything.
Which was what happened with their public safety special session.
Exactly. I mean, we can't have that. Right. But it can't wait.
Tell us a little bit about Patients Primero. Is this just strictly a grassroots organization? How did it get started? And I assume it's not a one-off, that you won't get everything you want this session, and I assume you'll keep going.
Well, the how we got started, that's the easy part.
Well, yeah, tell us a little bit about how it got started. Yeah.
So the Doña Ana County Medical Society was doing listening sessions, and I went to several of them. They started in 2024 and 2025, and we listened, we learned more. We all knew we were having problems accessing care, but we learned more, and then we started researching. And so Joanne Turnbull was told she needed to talk to me because of the work I did in animal welfare, and we just said, we need to mobilize people, just mm-hmm. people, and that's what we did. And so we have a listserv of people, and then we also have a whole nother group on our Facebook, and then we're coordinating with Albuquerque and Santa Fe and Jemez, the Rural Health Association, forming partnership. And so we don't count our numbers because they're doing part of the work. We're giving them information and tools,
right?
And they do part of the work to mobilize people in their area. As far as where we go at the end of the session, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But certainly, I would hope that somebody will pick up the effort if for whatever reason you guys feel that you've taken it as far as you can with this organization. Because, like I said, I I've covered the legislature long enough to know that they won't get everything done this session, and I don't think they're going to get malpractice done this session. I think they'll do the compacts, they'll do some nibbling around the edges on taxes, and they'll say, well, you know, we'll talk about it in the interim, and we'll come back and we'll look at it next year.
So you just made my day. And I'm sure the effort is going to continue.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the players may change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And definitely want new people and new energy and
mm-hmm. Yeah, grassroots activism.
Right.
You know, who could predict what will happen next year?
Right.
So, but we can predict that the issue will still be there, I'm afraid. And
well, and it's going to take years to rebuild.
It is.
If we can start the rebuilding process, and I think the compacts are an important step, but if we don't address medical malpractice, we're not going to get the full benefit of the compacts, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. Any final thoughts, Daisy?
Well, right, you're talking about Friday. Who's on the slate that we can call for the hearing that's happening on Friday? Anyone specific? I know you said call your legislator, but there's anyone specific?
Well, like my legislator is Joanne Ferrari, and she's powerful on that committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would reach out and call Joanne Ferrari and say, we want you to vote yes if that's what you want her to do.
And you can also call and testify during the committee
exactly.
meeting.
Yes. Use that Zoom link, and we're going to be posting it. By the time I get home, the link should actually be there so we can post it and send it out to everybody on the listserv and Facebook page and urge them to testify, to speak up.
And for people who want to learn more about Patients Primero, where would they go for that?
They can email us at patientspromero@gmail.com, and we have a website, Patients Primero.
Okay.
And there's a contact us form there, but we have a lot of information out there.
And once again, before we leave, what are the main bills that you're going to be looking for?
Definitely going to be watching the compacts, but definitely watching House Bill 99 on Friday.
Okay.